entertainment on broadbandboxoffice.com. I am your host, Lisa Dascoli. And my co-host for this evening is, again, the wonderful, hilarious Annie Weiss. Thank you for coming back, Annie.
Thank you, Lisa, for having me. I'm so excited.
Oh, yes, I am, too. We got to talk a minute. So
yes.
Call me.
All right.
What's been going on in your life?
Oh, my God, so much. So many things. Okay,
Fuck.
So I broke up with my boyfriend
of
2.5 years. No, it's fine. We wanted different things. I wanted a commitment. He wanted to date Asians.
Ooh.
So we wanted different things. But I know it's great, and I'm on Tinder. Don't judge. It's just coffee. And I wanted a date. And, okay, so, like, my first Tinder date was interesting. He kind of looked like Henry VIII in, like, his dying years. You know what I mean? He was about, like, 800 pounds, like, just red and gingery and had, like, sores on his legs and had the personality of wet paint. So that was great.
Oh, Lord. That was a short date, I'm assuming.
It was a short date.
Anybody else? Any other prospects?
Not so much. There was this one guy that I wanted to date with, this like Jewish kid from Tenafly. And I was like, okay, so we're like moving in the right direction, right? And I told my mom, I was like, he's Jewish, he's from Tenafly. She's like, oh my God, doctor, lawyer, what is he? And I said, he's a beatboxer. And she's like, ugh, not even an accountant.
I'm sure Betty was very sad about that.
Yeah, she was like, oh, we got to get you a doctor or somebody. No beatboxers for you, Anne.
Why do parents, or they are so fixated on doctors, lawyers? I mean, why? Why is that? Why do you?
I can't explain it. I feel like, especially with mothers, you know what I mean? Because they want their children, they want their daughters to have like a stable relationship, be comfortable, I guess. But I'm a comedian. I'm comfortable just the way I am. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you, well, when are you performing again? You said comedy. When are you performing again?
Tonight, right after the show.
All right, so we have to be on time.
No, it's fine. It's Bob. He's cool. He understands. And so I'm doing Whiskey Cafe right after the show. And then the 21st, I'm really excited because I'm doing Sloan Kettering for the patients.
What are you doing?
Sloan, like a comedy show for the patients. So I'm really, really excited about that. That's going to be awesome. And this Thursday, I'm in Jersey City, and then next Thursday, I'm at Scotty's. So I'm working everywhere. I'm really happy.
Good. I'm glad it's picking up.
Thank
and
so you.
And people can find you on your Facebook page.
On Facebook, Annie Weiss, and you can like be my fan, Annie Weiss Comedian.
Very
you
good.
You can like me.
Now, Annie.
Yes.
We have a really awesome guest this evening.
I'm really excited.
I know. We've been having a good time before we even got to... turning on the microphones, just we've been all talking like old friends. Richard Skipper is an award-winning and critically acclaimed entertainer, theater historian, and pop culture blogger. Writing for Richard Skipper Celebrates, he has conducted over 700 interviews, so I better be on my point.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And has over 1 million readers on his blog, and I want to know more about this blog. So,
I do, too. This sounds very interesting.
And his sister blog, it's called Call on Dolly.
Oh, God, I think I just died and went to heaven.
You have.
That
we
sounds
have to
amazing.
Find it. I know. And it's... his website is chronicling the Broadway classic Hello, Dolly. So, without any further ado, I'd like to welcome Richard Skipper.
I'm here. I'm the talk of the town.
Yes, you are, darling. No, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you for having me. It's not often that I get to Nutley, New Jersey.
No, it's not. And it's not often that you get to be interviewed. You're usually doing the interview.
That's
so
right.
I'm so happy that we get to pick your brain and find
turn
out
the
all,
tables.
Yes. Find out all the wonderful information that you've got going on in your head. Now, quick question. How did you start out?
How did I start out? I popped out of the womb and I said, I'm here. No, when I grew up, I'm 53 years old, proudly.
It does not look it, ladies.
No,
you
thank
don't.
You.
It looks so good.
But I grew up in the 1960s and 70s with when there were three networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC. And those were the networks that would sign on at 6 o'clock in the morning and sign off with the national anthem at 1 o'clock in the morning. And then there was the test pattern for a good 8 to 9 hours.
Right.
And I grew up at a time where those networks, they tried to reach out to the largest demographics that they could get. Mm-hmm. So entertainers from my generation would share the stage with entertainers from my parents' generation and from my grandparents' generation. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I grew up watching these great artists on television, mm-hmm. and having such an appreciation for what the old truly what was really truly show business mm-hmm. was all about. And that was the world that I really wanted to be a part of. So I grew up in a small town in South Carolina called Conway, which is just outside of Myrtle Beach. It's the gateway to Myrtle Beach. Mm-hmm. And I grew up on a tobacco farm in South Carolina. And I would watch these shows and I would mimic everything I saw on television. And before I even knew what the world of show business was all about, I wanted to be a part of that world. So I made my mind up. I started acting with a local theater company, the Theater of the Republic in Conway, which is still there. I was discovered by a wonderful woman by the name of Florence Epps, who took me under her arms and under her wings, I should say. Mm-hmm. And she put the word out that anytime I stepped in front of an audience, even right now, I'm carrying the mantle of every great entertainer mm-hmm. that has ever gone before me. And she gave me and instilled in me a real sense of the importance of who these people are and the contributions that they made to the business. So working with the Theater of the Republic, and I made up my mind when I was, this is a true story, when I was 14 years old, I was reading a book about what we now call creative visualization. Mm-hmm. And I was reading this book and it said, set your mind on a target like a homing pigeon and go after it. And I don't know what possessed me at that moment, but I closed the book and I went in and I said to my mom and my dad and my sister and my brothers, 5 years from today, I'm going to New York. That was on August 5th, 1974. And on August 5th, 1979, I went to New York. I had never flown before. I had never been away from home before. I had never slept in another bed other than my own, except when I stayed at my grandmother's. I had never obviously been to New York, so I knew nothing about what that world was about. But I had that dream that I was going to come to New York and I was going to be an actor. So I came to New York and started. I got my first acting job my third week in New York.
Wow.
Really? I did what a lot of artists did. There were more opportunities as far as summer stock was concerned. And before Reaganomics, unfortunately, cut the arts funding in New York City, there were hundreds upon hundreds of theaters that did showcases. Mm-hmm. So I was able to go from theater to theater to theater. And that was basically how it all started for me. And I have continued in the theater, working in all areas of the theater. I really don't like what the theater has become because I feel that it's become more of a commercial entity than an artistic entity.
I have to 100%
and
agree with you.
I believe, unfortunately, that the going to the Broadway theater is a treat for people who can afford to go.
Yes.
There was a time in our history where it was cheaper to go see a Broadway show than it was to see a movie during the 1940s. And the average person cannot afford to go see a Broadway show. And that really bothers me mm-hmm. as far as the accessibility mm-hmm. of what the theater is now. And I also don't understand people going to the theater and texting and tweeting and talking and doing all those things that people now do in the theater, because going to the theater for me is like going to church.
Right.
It is a sacred temple or shrine, and I have such a reverence for the artists that are on the stage. I dress when I go to the theater. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal for me. I can't afford to go to the theater as much as I would like to go to the theater. And Broadway, to me, has turned into Vegas, and it's all about glitz. And, you know, when you think about shows like, for example, Bells Are Ringing, yeah. which is such a simple 1950s Broadway musical with wonderful songs and a great storyline, you don't see shows like that on Broadway anymore.
I absolutely agree with you, Richard, and this is not, we weren't planning to talk about this, but you've absolutely, that is my feeling towards it. And I am bold enough to say that I kind of resent that if you think about it, there's nothing original happening on Broadway. It's all based on a movie.
Yes,
or
absolutely.
Based on a TV show. And for heaven's sakes, when did we go there? And I understand
I will answer
why
that.
It is.
I will answer that question for you. I think it's because of what is being fed to the public around the country.
The pop culture.
And it's pop culture. When people come to New York, for example, and they're putting out $400 to go see Book of Mormon, when they don't know who the actors are that are
right.
in the show, and they don't know who... They don't know any of the songs.
Right.
They don't even know what the story is. But they've been led to believe that when you come to New York, this is what you have to go and see. And I'm not negating or knocking Book of Mormon when I say this. I just think that it's not... You're absolutely right when it comes to the originality of it. But the success of Book of Mormon is not so much on the story itself as it is that these were the creators of South Park.
Yes, 100%.
Well, yes, and that's how they sell it on television, and so people hear that. Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, it's a Tony Award winner, so it's got its merits, and it's, you know, it does have its valid points. But, you know, I and I'm sorry to say this, but you know, how many Disney cartoons are we going to turn into Broadway shows?
Oh, we haven't seen the beginnings of this. Mm. We're going to see more and more and more of this. And the truth of the matter is, because of the ticket prices of going to see a Broadway show, yes. I can imagine a family coming in from Dubuque. Mm-hmm. Dubuque. Is it Dubuque or Dubuque?
I'm not sure.
Well, Dubuque for those who live there. No, people come to New York and they go. If you're going to put out... $300 or $400 per ticket to see a show, you want to know what you're buying tickets for.
Right, right.
And so I can understand that a family would want to go that route. And there are some wonderful stories. I unfortunately did not see Mary Poppins on Broadway. I wish I had.
No,
did you see it?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I actually saw Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and I liked it.
I did too.
You know,
I did too.
Very funny. I always thought to myself that it had more of a theater flair to it because of the way the movie
is so
right.
over the top.
That's probably
right.
where I got that. But I mean, some of the best experiences I've ever had in the theater were the pieces that made me think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
but
my belief.
I mean, my feeling is that if it inspires and it inspires kids to want to go out and to be creative.
Yes.
Because kids, you know, you mentioned earlier when we were talking before mm-hmm. we went on the air about the work that I've done for arts and education.
Yes, let's talk
and,
about that.
Well, for years I was on the board of the Dr. Carol Channing and Harry Collegian Foundation for the Arts, which unfortunately, after Harry passed on, is no longer in existence. Harry used to have a saying that most kids don't know the difference between a microphone and a xylophone because they've never been exposed to it. And I know that when I was growing up in South Carolina, once again, we had music teachers that came to our school
yes.
twice a week that we would stop our regular studies mm-hmm. and we would sing songs.
Yes.
And I was able to do theater in schools. And the thing that people don't understand is that when kids are working on a play, they are learning a sense of community.
Mm-hmm.
They are
Absolutely.
Learning the sense of working together for the common goal. A few years ago, I got involved because of the work that I've been doing on Dolly with a school in Weston, Connecticut, which is an affluent school. And they were doing a production of Hello, Dolly. And I found out about them because I got a Google alert that they were looking for Dolly costumes.
Oh, that's
and
so
I
cool.
actually had to some pieces that I donated to the school. And I ended up becoming a quote-unquote mentor for the kids and going and working with the kids mm-hmm. And talking to the kids. And I was told that when they built the stadium seating for the football fields, money was thrown at them. But when they wanted to put new seats in the auditorium, they had to do bake sales mm-hmm. and lemonade sales and magazine sales and anything they could do to raise that money. It was not just handed over to them the same way that and both are very important. We need sports in schools. We need recesses mm-hmm. in schools.
Mm-hmm.
And
Absolutely.
A lot of schools don't even have recess
yes,
anymore.
They don't.
And if a kid falls and hurts himself, you know, there's a problem. And how many times did you fall when you were going up?
Countless.
And I still fall, you know. So let us fall. Let us pick ourselves up and see what happens.
Well, I've always believed, and it's across the board, so many schools have this situation where the money is available for sports but not the arts, and I'm so sad that the imbalance is there because the arts are a discipline. Mm-hmm. And everything that you can say about a sporting event, a sports team, you can say about the theater.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
The difference is if the second baseman has to stay, you know, gets taken out and sit out, there's somebody else that can mm-hmm. take that place. There's nobody else for the role.
That's right. You know? That's right.
We're in trouble. Now, I wanted to circle back a little bit.
I always go off on these tangents.
No, absolutely. But you had mentioned something, which actually makes it very easy for me as an interviewer. You mentioned Carol Channing, and
yes.
you have a very special relationship with Carol Channing.
I do. Carol, well, for your listeners that don't know, for 20 years I performed as Carol Channing.
Yes.
I performed all over the country.
I know it's so rude to interrupt, but Annie, I have to tell you something. The first time I ever saw Richard Skipper mm-hmm. was a Halloween several years ago at the Duplex.
Okay.
And
oh my God,
the Duplex
that was many years ago.
Yes. The Duplex has a descending staircase and it's kind of like a basement place. And Scott Trout saw you coming in, and he was prepared. He stopped the music he was playing and started playing the opening number for Hello, Dolly. Oh. And Richard descended the stairs, and I will never forget that moment for my life. So I had to share that with you.
Well, that's how it started for me. It started out as a Halloween thing. I used to go around to all the piano bars and perform as Carol, and it was just a Halloween thing that I did. I never in a million years would think that I would pursue that as a career. But people kept saying, you should do a show about Carol Channing. You should do a show. And when Carol came to Broadway in 1994 to do the last revival that she did in Dolly, a friend of mine called me up and said, if you don't put a show together about her, you're making the biggest mistake of your life. So I started putting a show together. And as fate would have it, I got the opportunity to do the show for Carol before I opened. And it was
so
just
cool.
One of those incredible moments. And I went that night saying, if she doesn't like what I'm doing, I will never do it again. I had nothing invested in it. You need to know for me that I have an adage. I know I'm going to sound like Pollyanna, but if I have offended one person, I've offended one person too many. And so I try to go through life being very, very careful about not offending anyone. And I wouldn't be able to go on stage doing what I did because it was always an homage to her.
Absolutely.
And presented her with love and respect. And the wonderful thing that came out of all this was that over the years, Carol and I became very good friends. I stayed at Carol's home in Palm Springs. When she got her star on the Palm Springs Walk of Fame, I was there with the family. So those are the memories that I will always cherish as far as that work is concerned. But that's how that relationship began. She respected the fact. She said, the first time that I performed, and this was a quote that I used throughout my entire career, I'm no longer performing as Carol, but when I was doing that, she said that it was the first time that she was shown with respect, love, and polish.
That is huge.
I think that's what I was trying to say. When he descended the stairs, it was truly a star-filled moment. It really, you came down, it was...
Well, it's funny. Carol and I had conversations, and we talked about being soulmates. We're both Aquarians. Mm-hmm. Her birthday is just a few 2 weeks before mine, and we both have the same passion for the theater. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, when Carol started out, she started out the same way that I did. I used to do lunchtime concerts on the front steps of our high school, and I would do impressions of all the shows that I saw on television that night. When Carol was in high school, she used to do presentations, doing impressions of all the other teachers and the other students in the school.
Wow.
And she started out as an impressionist when she first started out in the business.
I had no idea about
so
that.
So those are like the similarities between Carol
That's
Channing
so cool.
and myself.
Now, I want to talk about your blog because I want as many people to know about everything you're doing and We're never going to get to everything you're doing, but I do want to make sure that we mention your blog.
Well, the blog is called Richard Skipper Celebrates. When I first started writing, I wanted to write a blog that celebrated what I call an artist body of worth, W-O-R-T-H, as opposed to a body of work. Mm-hmm. What makes an artist tick? What makes an artist get from point A to point B and so on and so on and so on? I'm not interested in gossip. I think that we live in a TMZ generation where the goal is to knock these people and to tear them down. Mm-hmm. And I also feel, you know, we'll talk about what's happening tonight on Broadway. I think it's tonight that they're dimming the lights for Joan Rivers.
Are.
And there was a controversy about that, that the Broadway League said that she did not fit the criteria of what that honor entailed. And it's basically, from what I understand, for most artists who have appeared on Broadway in the past 20 years. And that sums up the culture that we live in. If it didn't happen in the last 20 years, it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And there are so many artists that are responsible. One of the most wonderful things that came out of Joan's passing was the outpouring of love that every comedian, every single comedian, especially the women comedians,
you
saying
that's
the path that Joan Rivers paved for these people.
Absolutely.
And I heard an interview this morning. I was listening to Seth Brodetsky, who I listened to on Sirius XM radio. And he was interviewing, it was an interview with Joan Rivers a few years ago. And he said, you didn't have those role models ahead of you. Who did you look up to? And she said it was Lenny Bruce.
Wow.
And Lenny Bruce said, know your own truth. I'm paraphrasing, but know your truth. And the hell with whether or not anyone gets that. And Joan Rivers paved that way for herself. My most recent blog is all about a celebration of her life and the times that our paths did cross over the years, and a few testimonials from other artists as well. But I really want to celebrate what the contributions that artists bring to the business. Mm-hmm. And that's where the blog started. And I am in awe of these people. I mean, I just interviewed Debbie Reynolds recently, and I'm like a kid in a candy store. I'm pinching myself, going, I cannot believe that I'm on the phone with Debbie Reynolds, who has this phenomenal legacy of work. And yet most people don't know Debbie Reynolds beyond being Deborah Messing's mother on Will and Grace.
Right.
And they don't know her MGM career and everything, because it's the culture that we live in.
Right.
And I think one of the greatest disservices to the entertainment industry was when MTV came along, because MTV, I talked at the beginning of this interview about those networks that tried to cater to a larger demographic.
Mm-hmm.
When MTV came along, it played to a very specific demographic.
Yes, it did.
And if you didn't fit into that demographic, you were not seen, you were not known. And I know our time is running out, but one thing that I do want to stress, in New York City, believe it or not, we don't have a theater museum. Arlene Dahl has been working tirelessly for years and years and years to get a Broadway Walk of Fame.
That was so
and she's
amazing.
Met resistance over and over and over again. If you go to Madame Tussauds Wax Museum, which is right in the theater district, there's not a Broadway section.
You know what? You're absolutely right. I have been there, and you said that, and it didn't occur to me because I have been in it.
Same.
And it's mostly pop, not even movie stars.
No,
it's
but it is
pop.
It is
Taylor
every
Swift.
Pop area. I mean, every niche of pop culture is covered. Television, sports, movies, television I mentioned, sports figures, it's all covered except Broadway.
Right.
Imagine a room where you see Carol Channing in the Dolly gown, Mary Martin in Peter Pan, Yul Brynner in The King and I, Ethel Merman as either Mama Rose or Annie Oakley. There are so many icons that should be represented at Madame Tussauds, and it's not there. And just like the stars in Hollywood on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, each one of those mannequins or wax figures is sponsored by someone. And it's just a matter of getting people who want to sponsor for the Broadway community as well.
And it definitely should be sponsored because we need Broadway. It's so a part of
our
culture.
Number one, it's the number one tourist industry in New York, in the state of New York. Mm-hmm. And people come from all over the world, and they want to see a Broadway show.
Right.
I've always been passionate about theater. I always will be passionate about theater, and it's one of the loves of my life.
And why is the funding for the arts the first thing to go in our schools? Why is that? It was Winston Churchill who said, "If we're not fighting for the arts, what are we fighting for?"
Right.
And it amazes me. I mean, even now, when people who are getting Lifetime Achievement Awards on both the Tonys, the Emmys, the Academy Awards, those awards are not presented on national television. Those awards are now relegated to another night, and
they tell you about their names.
Right.
In memoriam, there are names that are being left out year after year after year, and you bring some artist on to perform the songs. I remember at the Academy Awards this year that Pink sang Over the Rainbow and did a wonderful job. But there were clips, I mean, there were huge screens behind her of clips from the movie The Wizard of Oz. That was what she was there to represent. Mm-hmm. And yet, nobody watching at home saw those clips.
That's a shame.
And Gone with the Wind also is a movie from 1939. There was no mention of Gone with the Wind at the Academy Awards and the Tony Awards that these great icons have passed on, and the in memoriam is not giving them the credit that they're due. And I grew up when the Tony Awards was all about celebrating its rich history.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, it's funny because a quick story, when my oldest daughter was a little girl, she was about 7 or 8, and Singing in the Rain happened to be on television. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Sit down, you're going to like this." She went along with Mom. And as she's watching this, and I just remember her turning to me and go, "This is wonderful."
Well, it is.
Yeah. Because if a child's not exposed to these things, then how can they appreciate the arts if they're not exposed to them?
There was a great special a few weeks ago that I was watching about Jimmy Van Heusen, who wrote over 600 songs, and most of them became standards. Mm-hmm. And they were showing clips, and there was this great clip of Nancy Wilson singing a song from Skyscraper.
Okay.
And she's singing the song, and it was one camera focused on her, looking stunning and singing the song. Nowadays, and I counted this one night, there must have been 125 cuts, mm-hmm, with an artist. I don't need to see how the audience is reacting.
Right.
But those producers think that we need to see how the audience is reacting so that we will react the same way. And, you know, getting back to Joan for a moment, she was being interviewed in this interview this morning, and she said she went to see Audra McDonald on Broadway in Porgy and Bess.
Okay.
And she was on her feet cheering and everything. And John Lahr, who is a wonderful critic, was sitting behind Joan. And, you know, Joan was acting as a critic. She was there as a critic. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Critics don't give standing ovations." And she said, "Well, this one does." Because she had such a passion for the theater.
Yeah.
And I'm going to miss her. I mean, I can't believe that she's gone.
I think we all will. And I think that her loss will become very evident as time goes on. We will start to realize, oh my gosh, part she played.
Right.
And she was such an inspiration to me. And everybody says, who do you look up to as a comedian? The first person I always say is Joan Rivers. And I've been saying that forever, even before I started stand-up comedy. You know what I mean? She's such an inspiration.
She's great.
Richard, how can we follow you? How can we find out what you're
doing?
Well,
there's the door. follow me. I have a website, richardskipper.com. I am probably one of the most accessible people in the business.
And nicest.
Thank you. I have, with my blog, go to my blog, richardskipper.com, or you can just do Richard Skipper Celebrates.
Mm-hmm.
I love to be Googled, so Google me, and then follow me on Facebook, and follow me on Twitter, and if you have ideas or suggestions about people that you think I should interview, they don't necessarily have to be famous people. If there's someone in your hometown or someone who does great work in the arts, I want to interview them. I want them to be known. I want them to have their moment in the spotlight as well.
Thank you.
I'm definitely friending you right now.
Okay, great.
And just as a, because I know we have a few minutes left before our program has to end, but I wanted to bring this up because I had the wonderful experience a couple weeks ago, of seeing En Avant. And please.
With William Schumann.
Yes.
Who was wonderful. And I do want to mention I didn't produce it. I was his publicist for the show. And I'm doing publicity for a lot of artists, and that's another show. We'll talk about that. But I do want to mention for your listeners out there that on October 5th at 5 p.m., the information's on my website, I'm going to be sitting down and interviewing Marge Champion. She just celebrated her 95th birthday.
Wow.
And October 5th happens to be the anniversary of her marrying Gower Champion. And she was, a lot of people don't know her history. She was the model for Snow White in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs in 1937.
That's so interesting. That's
she was
amazing.
The model for, in those days, the artists used to sketch them. Yeah. She was also the artist for the Dancing Hippo in Fantasia. And that's just the start of her career.
I would really like that.
She's proud of it. She's proud of it.
Oh, the whole thing, like Dancing Hippo.
So October 5th, 5 o'clock. And go on my website, richardskipper.com, to get the information. And please make a reservation. It will sell out.
Absolutely. Well, I know, as I said, we could talk forever. And I said, you know, we only do a half an hour show. And I knew that I was not going to get to half of the things that I wanted to bring up about you. But please come back.
I would love to.
This way we can continue the conversation.
Or you can just follow me tonight.
I think that, you know, I really do hope that my listeners and anybody who knows me and is supporting my show, that they also go on Facebook page.
I appreciate that.
Because first of all, you're just a gentleman and a wonderful person, positive person to be around. So join me each month on broadbandboxoffice.com. And like us on Facebook, Talk of the Town, and let me know how we're doing. Let me know what you think. I love to get messages. I love to get input. And my name is Lisa Dascoli. Annie,
thank you so much.
And again, Richard Skipper,
thank you so much for coming. This was great.
And we'll see you again next month.
Hi, everybody. How are you? I'm Bob Gonzo of The Bob Gonzo Show. And I'm here to introduce The Bob Gonzo Show to you. Watch The Bob Gonzo Show on ComedyMondays.com and iTunes. Once again, ComedyMondays.com and iTunes. Watch it live or you can watch it on the archives, which means you can watch it forever. Bob Gonzo is the greatest show on the internet right now. It's the funniest, it's the sweetest, it's endearing. We have stand-up comics, we have bands, we have actors, we have people in the fashion industry. We have everything you need. So once again, The Bob Gonzo Show, the greatest show in the world. And if you watch it, you will become a better and happier and sweeter person. Watch The Bob Gonzo Show, everybody. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Tom Ragu of the Tom Ragu Sit Down Comedy Show. You can listen to us at the Broadband Box Office. And for more information, please visit www.tomragu.com/podcast.
It's the Mark Daisy Show, filled with gifts, fun, and surprises, and $20,000 in cash for every viewer. Well, maybe not. But we do talk about stuff and things that you might want to think about after, before, and during the show. It's engaging, at least. So come by, won't you? We're here at Facebook, on iTunes. We broadcast from VK Media right here on the East Coast, and we're part of broadbandboxoffice.com. Check us out, come by, like us, do what you can, spend some time, take some time off, sit down, have a viewing. It's happening, it's now, it's controversial, or maybe not. But we could use a couple of more viewers, maybe starting with you. Won't you?
Hi, Hi, I'm Randy Lupo, host of the Randy Lupo Show on Broadband Box Office. Wait, is that a tongue twister or an alliteration? Come meet my favorite people, comedians, actors, writers, spiritual people, and everyone in between. I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Hello, this is Dr. Barry Prostowski. I invite you to watch Courageous Doctors, an exciting new show on Broadband Box Office about how healthcare is affecting you today.
I'm Lou Cesenia.
And I am Daisy. And check us out at the Greater Jersey Buzz.
At BroadbandBoxOffice.com. BroadbandBoxOffice.com. Remember that. The finest talent in the world are on these microphones every month. I kid you not.
Yes, we will have a variety of different guests ranging from comedians, entertainers, singers, politicians, you name it. We're going to bring it to you with light conversation, a lot of information, but most of all, a lot of fun. Check us out at the Greater Jersey Buzz.
And you'll see Daisy too.
And you'll see Lou.